music, radio free. You see blue skies and think of sea. How are you doing? And later on, switch on TV. They give me a news, they give half truths to me. They give us wise, they feed us lies. How are we doing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Educate, they fabricate. And we sit back till
it's too late.
Radio Avenger. Rick Adams is on.
Alrighty, here we are, folks. We're on tonight. And we are here on this Tuesday night waiting for Dave from Texas to join us. Dave Colson will be with us in a few moments. He's scheduled to appear and talk about these domestic and international issues relating to constitutional jurisdiction. So we'll await him. In the meantime, let us see now. We have this Swedish artist who angered Muslims by depicting the Prophet Muhammad as a dog, was assaulted Tuesday as angry protesters interrupted his university lecture about the limits of artistic freedom. Lars Vilks told the AP that a man in the front row ran up to him and headbutted him during the lecture, breaking his glasses but leaving him uninjured. It wasn't immediately clear what happened to the attacker or who he really was. But anyway, this is just another typical rant of the media who are attempting to add fuel to the fire in this caricature of Islam, as we see the United States continuing to wage its war against an entire group of people based on their religion, at the behest of an entire group of people based upon their race and their racial identity, i.e. the Edomites, the Kenites, the so-called Jews. So I think this is shaping up to be a much more volatile time in which we live than we have ever seen before. And, of course, we note that much of what's going on in the world today is just that. It is turbulence. It is revolutionary. It is vile. It is violent. Even the weather itself is certainly sending us some messages, folks. So, anyway, I'd just like to mention a couple of things like that before we continue. And tomorrow night we're expecting George, Hungarian George, to join us and to appear on the program. Tomorrow night, he will call us. So George, if you're listening, don't forget. We booked you for tomorrow night. Want to hear what George has to say about his experiences and Hungary under communism and Bolshevism. Well, right now we do have our guest, Dave from Texas, and he joins us for tonight's most of tonight's program, I think. Dave, hello.
How you doing, Rick? I'm here.
Okay, I'm glad you're here.
Here for all 2 hours if you want.
Well, if we generate enough interest, we will do that. And
I don't think you have to
worry
about not generating enough interest when I'm not to be at all egotistical.
Well, certainly don't have to worry about you generating enough to say, that's for sure.
Okay, well, of course not. I've got plenty
you know, tonight, I thought when we come back after the first break, one of the things that is, of course, on everybody's mind is the continued degradation of the Supreme Court and what is on that court now and what will, in all likelihood, join the makeup of the court. And I want to talk a little bit about Elena Kagan and her record so far of pronouncements, her writings, her service to people like Abner Mikva on the court since the Carter days, and what that represents for America today in terms of the final fall of the empire. I want to talk about that. Also want to spend a lot more time on the Constitution and health care reform, Obamacare, and how unconstitutional it is, among other things. So I welcome your participation. And when we come back, Dave, I want you to give our listeners a brief description about yourself and your involvement, your activism in Republican circles, constitutional organizations, Ron Paul's campaign, and so forth. So, all right, I've done enough talking, folks. When we come back, it's Dave from Texas as our guest. You join us, stay with us, and we'll be right back in 3 minutes. Rick Adams, Uncensored.
This is an important message from HempUSA.org. For our listeners who are advancing in age, baby boomers, and to all who want to be healthy, we urge you to try our microplant powder and see the difference it makes in your life. Please visit HempUSA.org and read about microplant powder. It's easy to take, one heaping tablespoon in any liquid 3 times a day. Call 908-691-2608 or visit HempUSA.org. Please inform your family, friends, and relatives about this incredible product. It can change your life if you give it a chance. So try microplant powder today. Call 908-691-2608. In this toxic world, microplant powder can help now in cleaning out heavy metals, parasites, viruses, fungus, and bacteria. Please download our catalog at hempusa.org today.
Did you ever wish that you could have done something while you still had the chance? What will you do if your income ends tomorrow? Or if you lose your home, as many already have? Do you have enough money to survive through an economic depression? If you don't want to gamble with your future, then FreeToProsper.com can help you quickly end your debt problems, protect your property and possessions, and develop a personal strategy to get you through the hard times. Most importantly, you get to keep your money and not pay another cent to creditors. Our program is often superior to bankruptcy, consolidation, or settlement. Visit FreeToProsper.com to find out more. This is your real chance to act ahead, so don't delay. Your future may depend on it. Call 718-615-0123 to learn more. That's 718-615-0123. Or visit FreeToProsper.com today.
Introducing the new Go Berkey Kit, the first of its kind portable water purification system for those on the go. The new Go Berkey system has an amazing output of about a gallon an hour. Each Go Berkey Kit includes a 1-quart high-quality stainless steel system, complete with a black Berkey purification element, a generic sports bottle, and a nylon carrying case. The whole kit weighs a mere 2.25 pounds. With an expected element life of around 3,000 gallons, you can refill the Go Berkey system up to an incredible 12,000 times before needing to replace the element. The new Go Berkey kit is perfect for backpacking, hiking, emergency packs, bug out bags, international travel, car emergency kits, or for your desk at home or at work. Get your Go Berkey kit today for only $139 by calling 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719. Go to republicbroadcasting.org. The online store, it's a featured product.
Get back at him with Rick Adams, the Radio Avenger, on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Yes, here we are with our guest, Dave from Texas. Dave, you have the opportunity now, once again, for our new listeners who hear you quite often and don't know a lot about you, to tell us a little bit about your activism and your interest in the constitutions of the United States and your state.
Well, it's good to talk to you again, Rick, and the audience. Many of the listeners may have heard me call in, and my call-in handle, Dave in Texas, was interestingly enough, I actually got that from you, believe it or not. I don't know if you remember. First time I ended up being called Dave in Texas was when I called your show, and I actually called in under David in Texas, but you, right. you'd pronounced it as Dave in Texas. Mm-hmm. And I realized immediately when I heard you say that, that it actually has a bit of a better ring to it, so to speak, as a call-in handle, if you will. So mm-hmm. I've used it ever since. So
good.
I take this opportunity to give you credit for unwittingly, but as positively as it turns out, helping to coin
well, that's
that, wonderful. Call-in handle.
That's shorter, it's easy to remember.
Right, and no one forgets
it
now, everyone knows who I am.
Yes, it's very informal, too, so that's what's wonderful. Tell us a little bit about your involvement in Texas politics, your involvement in you know, constitutional issues, if you will.
Well, I've been interested in the Constitution. I am a strict constructionist. That is, I believe in strict interpretation and adherence mm-hmm. to the Constitution as actually written and mm-hmm. inspired by interpretations where there's some dispute from the Federalist Papers. Too bad it doesn't seem that the elite law schools like Harvard and Yale, among others these days, teach from the heart, from the Federalist Papers. They seem to look down on them, ignore them, not take them seriously if they even mention them, and they don't really adhere to common law. They don't teach that. They're teaching all these law schools, and I believe this is true of Ms. Kagan as well, how to be an elitist, an activist, and how to reinterpret law from a perspective outside of that of which would be sovereign to our country. And they've been pulling people to basically corporate contracts applied to what should be U.S. citizens through federal government welfare. They say you sign for a welfare program, then you've volunteered to be under a voluntary contractual, obligatory agreement with the federal government of the United States, not the constitutional federal government, but a corporate entity which calls itself, for legal purposes, USA Incorporated. It is actually a large for-profit corporation, which, in my opinion, piggybacks atop the what's supposed to be constitutional federal government of the United States. Mm-hmm. And they have been indoctrinating for decades. Liberal activists, law school students, become lawyers, attorneys, prosecutors, judges, politicians, legislators, and elected executives and members of the federal bureaucracy, and they've moved them in with elitist secret society groups, such as the Council on Foreign Relations, especially in the State Department, and other groups, such as, frankly, the Trilateral Commission, into some of the other higher executive agencies of our federal government. And they've been pulling the country apart from what is supposed to be strict adherence to constitutional government, as the Founding Fathers would have understood it and intended mm-hmm. it.
Right.
And I'm opposed to that. I started getting involved myself in voting when I first turned 18. I was always interested in politics and government and history. And I was still just coming out of high school, just starting college. I started my first semester in college was right after high school. And I registered to vote right when I first turned 18. I voted regularly every 2 and 4 year election cycles since that time. My family is historically certainly at least semi-prominent Republican family. It goes back, our family history is involved in the Republican Party. It goes back to the start of the party. They were among the first delegates, basically, to help found it, arguably. Mm-hmm. And they've been there from the beginning. They broke away from the Whig Party at the time because they were concerned over the issue of abolitionism. They weren't for federal control of the state, but they did want to end slavery because they didn't think anyone should be subjugated to non-constitutional rights. Therefore, they didn't want slavery being imposed in the South because they didn't want it able to be brought up into the North either. Not mm-hmm. because they wanted federal control over the states in the sense that it's been known in more, well, I say since at least 1913. There's dispute going all the way back to Reconstruction era, and there's things to be discussed about that, and that could be another whole show in itself, so probably won't quite go into all that tonight.
Yes.
But I certainly say that since 1913 onward, with what I believe to be the not properly ratified 16th and 17th Amendments to the Constitution, giving mm-hmm. us their income tax system and taking away states' rights of equal suffrage in the U.S. Senate as prescribed mm-hmm. in Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution, they've taken the sovereignty of the states and put it under the control of the federal government in a way I don't believe is proper. I don't think it's constitutional. I don't even think mm-hmm. it's the best way to do it. And I don't think the Founding Fathers would want it. If they were still here today, they would want to undo what was done in 1913. That, of course, also the which wasn't even an amendment, but acts like the equivalent of one, the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, because mm-hmm. it does things which aren't constitutional, and they give it the power as though it was, they say it's settled law. Actually, you could argue whether the Federal Reserve Act was even properly passed by the House, because in December of 1913, when they claim it was passed, it was not a recorded vote. It was a vote of acclamation. And they're not even certain a quorum was present. And a quorum must be present in order for a vote of acclamation to count. And a vote of acclamation can't really be used for the purpose of a vote of final passage, especially mm-hmm. of landmark legislation as proposed, such as the Federal Reserve Act.
And that's why they passed it just on the Christmas vacation, the eve of Christmas, because they knew that there would be a significant number of congressmen away, and they did not like the idea of some of the opposition that was brewing to it.
Unfortunately, in the years since that time, they've passed a lot of other laws that I think are not properly constitutional using a similar tactic.
That goes without saying, yes.
So I'm concerned about that. My family's history has been involved off and on in the Republican Party for its entire history. On my father's side, the family history goes back in America to all the way back to the 1600s and very early colonial history in this country. And then prior to that, most of my family is Scottish and Scots-Irish. On my mother's side, it's part Scandinavian, part Dutch, part German, primarily.
Great.
My mother's side of the family came a little bit later, but it was, I think, in the very early 1800s. Most of my mother's ancestors were from the South, Tennessee, and into what would later be Mississippi, from the time after they first got there. My father's side of the family came over into New England and actually western Massachusetts, Connecticut, and a little bit in New Hampshire in the early colonial days, and then it spread all over the country in the years since, the broader family. I myself have lived here in Texas for most of my life. I've lived here for over 40 years. I wasn't born in Texas, but I've lived most of my life in Texas since I was very, very young.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess being known as being from Texas is apt in my case. I think in terms of I'm for the Constitution in the Founding Fathers' sense of the Constitution, not the way it's practiced today, the way they would have wanted it. I'm for state sovereignty within the Union, but I'm also just as strongly for collective national sovereignty vis-a-vis the outside world. I don't believe there should be any diminution of U.S. sovereignty in relation to the UN, the World Bank, the IMF, and all those other type of global institutions, the World Trade Organization, Bank of International Settlement, and a whole host of laundry list of other international type groupings that want to encroach on our sovereignty. UNESCO, IAEA, World Food Program, World Health Organization, and a lot of non-governmental organizations, Trilateral Commission being one of them, among others. I'm not in favor of any of that. I'm not in favor of the UN thinking it should claim control of all the world's oceans. The world's oceans are supposed to belong equally to all the nations of the world, except for when you get into the territorial waters of the nation, and then territorial waters belong to the specific country in whose boundary it's said to belong. So if you go just off the U.S. coast, that's within U.S. territorial waters. That's U.S. territory, not U.N. property. We don't need to cede it to the U.N. That's theft of our property if we give it to them. And it's treason if our Congress votes to let them have it under something called the Law of the Sea Treaty, which is something I very strongly oppose. It proposes to do that. It also, unbeknownst to most people, proposes to give the U.N. control into waterways into the United States, such as the Great Lakes region and rivers like the Mississippi and Missouri River chain, and Snake River and other major rivers and large bodies of water within the U.S. And there are some members of the U.S. Senate who actually want to give it to the U.N., which is totally insulting to our sovereigns. And I oppose it. There's other people who want to give the U.N. control of our entire national park system under a program called the World Heritage Site Program, which I oppose. There are other people who want the U.N. to control all U.S. municipal development under something called Agenda 21 Sustainable Development, which I oppose. They want to control all private property under something they call the International Property Maintenance Code, which if they got what they want, you couldn't do anything on your own property without UN permission, which means you don't really control your own property. I'm also opposed to property tax, which actually came in primarily the FDR's time. It doesn't actually go back, at least in the way it's currently practiced. It doesn't go back to the early days of our country the way most people think.
That's right.
Most Americans, until well after 1900, paid no direct property tax. Some farmers did pay a tax on the degree of profit of their crops they produced after they brought them to market. If they suffered a loss, they didn't know anything. They kept the majority of the profit of their crops. The property in which the crop was grown never was directly taxable because they owned it. It later was taken from them when they took out debt loans to finance growing crops, and when they fell in behind on their loans, the bankers who extended these loans to them claimed the property as collateral. And then they pulled legal complications with state governments to impose direct permanent property taxes on them.
Well, it sounds so far, the way you've described yourself, Dave, that you meet the qualifications of the Southern Poverty Law Center terrorists, American terrorist classification. So welcome aboard, Dave. It's good to hear you.
Never done any violence in my life, folks.
Just 3 minutes from now with Dave from Texas, and we'll get into the issue.
corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Help, I've fallen and I can't get up. If you have an elderly loved one, please listen. Whether it's fire danger, a serious fall, or other type of home emergency, Life Alert is there for you. The company with the slogan, Help, I've Fallen and I Can't Get Up, protects 60,000 members.
The first time I fell in that bedroom and I couldn't reach the phone.
When you have a heart attack like I did and there's no one there, Life Alert was there for me.
Having a secure feeling through Life Alert is ideal.
My independence is possible because of it.
Listen to former U.S. Surgeon General Dr. C. Everett Koop.
Thanks to Life Alert, you can live alone without ever being alone. That's why I wear one.
With Life Alert protection, elderly people can often postpone going to a nursing home for several years. For a free brochure about Life Alert service, call now 1-800-410-0739. 1-800-410-0739. Call Life Alert now for your free brochure, 1-800-410-0739.
Here's Dr. John Mattson, a naturopathic doctor, and his views on Cartavite.
I would like to thank you, Don, for making my job so much easier, because your products just make it so simple, right? To fool around with a lot of exotic things that don't work, we can just put them on Cartavite and things start to work almost right away. I've had dozens of patients with heart problems who have corrected them, and what it's doing, there's so much garlic in there that has a yeast killing effect. That yeast is a big problem in the gut, pushes the liver hard. It also has metal chelating effect, and most of the other herbs in there I find that strengthen the arteries. They help to neutralize free radicals. Your remedy is as close to what we do in our program as you can get as far as one supplement goes. It's working on the gut, it's working on the liver, it's working on the arteries. What more can you ask for?
For more information or to order your Cartavite, call 1-877-928-8822. Cartavite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or tincture. Our website is heartdrop.com.
Can man control his destiny? Can he change the shape of things to come?
All righty, here we are. We're back now with Dave from Texas. And Dave, I think that pretty much summarizes your belief system, unless there's anything to add before we get into the issues of the day. Is there?
Well, the one quick thing to your intro right there, I was going to say every person should decide their own destiny, because it's not government's job to do it for them. These elitists think government should run societies and rule over people, because they actually believe people aren't capable of ruling themselves or ought not be allowed to rule themselves, because they think only elite should run the world. And they want to bring about a world system where only a few elite control all wealth, all power, all property, all assets, all resources, mm-hmm. and all people. And it's patently wrong, patently unconstitutional, it's unchristian. It's actually, even for that matter, un-Jewish, if you read the Bible. Yet these people who are, many of them who are secular humanists, want to impose this on the world. They're very liberal, they're socialists. They call themselves progressives, but they really are socialists and communists. And I'm against that, because it believes in state control of property, assets, resources, curricula, and public education, totally under centralized control, and the monetary system. And there's no individual liberty. You only have a member of a bloc group. They think governments are sovereign, but people are not. Our Constitution and our nation's Declaration of Independence was founded on the exact opposite principle. Rights of property, rights of individuals, people being sovereign over government, not government being sovereign over people. Government is supposed to serve and represent the people, not control and rule over them in a dictatorial fashion and claim ownership of them or control over their fate. It's not supposed to do that. It's not even supposed to have a right to claim to do that.
Now, since the early part of the 20th century, as you know, that entire foundation of our Republican form of government had been eroding and had been subverted, if you will, into a Marxist, Talmudic, socialist, collectivist system of thought where, in fact, the collective, what was supposed to be the collective, that is, quote, the people as a whole, would be the object of veneration, not individual rights, but state rights representing the people. So this Bolshevik philosophy was making its way into government, a la the Roosevelt administration, particularly, with court-packing schemes attempting to change the entire legal makeup of the court and our nation. And, you know, unfortunately, it worked. It's been successful. Where today, we are now considering what the Supreme Court has become. It has become another instrument in the destruction of the very basis of our human liberty, for the most part, though not entirely. And yet, we see the nomination of this woman, this Kagan woman, Elena Kagan, who is the Solicitor General. She is the Dean of Harvard Law School, as an indication as to how far down the road to totalitarianism and totalitarian legal thought we have come, Dave.
I'm unfortunately must agree with the thrust of what you're saying there. I might, but just a couple phrases, just to be diplomatic words, change this a little bit, but obviously I totally agree with the thrust and the subject matter of what you're saying. Miss Elena Kagan, as she is known, is the current acting Solicitor General of the Obama administration. That's the third-ranking position in the Attorney General's office in the U.S. Department of Justice. She is the one who's supposed to represent the federal government, of the executive branch of the federal government, in suits and cases before the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals and the United States Supreme Court. At least the position of Solicitor General normally does that, and at times has other duties in assistance to the Attorney General as may prove appropriate, at the direction of the president, I believe how they define it. In her case, she was a former law student turned professor turned dean of the law school of Harvard. While she was a student, I believe she also was for a time editor of the Harvard Law Review, as Obama later did himself, or says he did anyway. I'm not even going to dispute whether that's the case or not just now, but his writings at that time, however, are sealed. Her writings, to my knowledge, are not. Now, what I do know of, what I've learned about her just in the last day or so, and I don't claim to be the world's great expert on her, but it has slipped out that she wrote her college thesis, of all things, on the development of world socialism. So not exactly a conservative ideologue here.
Well, she was young and immature at the time, you understand.
But the problem is, by her own admission, she brought these philosophies when she served in a lesser-ranking position in the Clinton administration. She, as you pointed out, clerked for a time for then-federal Judge Abner Vigfa, who later served for a time as legal counsel to President Clinton.
He also
served for a time in Jimmy Carter's administration. And Ms. Kagan had also clerked, I think she's clerked for Thurgood Marshall for a time way back when he was still around, if I'm not mistaken.
Toward the end of his career,
right,
if you want to call it that, yes.
And then more recently, she was the Dean of Harvard Law School prior to becoming the Solicitor General, but she's never had any official judicial experience of any kind on the federal bench.
I guess we could be thankful for that.
Well, she may have done more damage to the country, I mean, from an ideological perspective, right, of potential ruling. On the other hand, she doesn't have any experience. Arguably, I was speaking with John Stadmiller this afternoon, that it could be argued that Harriet Myers technically had more experience to be on the Supreme Court and was asked to step away from her nomination by President Bush than Ms. Kagan has, because she has no judicial experience at all. And Ms. Myers was also at one time head of the SMU Law School.
All right,
for some reason, that was not good enough.
Time for a break. We'll come back in 3 minutes with Dave from Texas, talking about constitutional issues, and we're going to get into the so-called Obamacare reform package as well, and what an abomination that will be, folks. Stay tuned. More just ahead.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Do you need help getting your child to behave? I'm behavioral therapist James Lehman, and I'm willing to give away thousands of my best-selling total transformation programs for free. All you do is tell us how the program works for you and your family. Did it turn around your child's behavior? Did the screaming and arguing stop in your home? Is he doing better in school? The total transformation has helped hundreds of thousands of families. I want to see what it can do for you, and I'm willing to let you have it for free. Just order my program, use it with your child, then send me your feedback. I'll refund the purchase price of the program. You keep the Total Transformation Program forever, for free. You don't have to struggle with your child's bad behavior one more day, because now you can try my Total Transformation, and the program will be free.
Limited number of free programs available. Call now. 1-800-583-1093. 1-800-583-1093. That's 1-800-583-1093.
Aerial spray, chemtrails, the modified atmosphere, heavy metals and pesticides, carcinogens and chemical fibers all falling from the sky. You have a choice to keep your body clean. Detoxify with microplant powder from hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608. It's odorless and tasteless and used in any liquid or food. Protect your family now with microplant powder. Cleaning out heavy metals, parasites, and toxins. Order it now for daily intake and stock it now for long-term storage. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
Are skyrocketing prescription costs draining your budget? If you don't have insurance or are taking medication not covered by insurance, the Powerhouse Savings Card can lower your prescription costs by up to 50%. Now you and your family can save 20 to 50% on all prescriptions. It's accepted by most pharmacies and mail-order pharmacies nationwide. No prescription card is easier to use. Just show your card and save 20 to 50% right on the spot. There are no monthly fees, just a one-time processing fee of only $4.95 for you and your immediate family. Stop paying full price for prescriptions. Stop going without the medication you need because it costs too much. Now your family can get the prescriptions they need at a cost you can afford. Call 1-800-963-0232 now and start saving money with the Powerhouse Savings Card. Call 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232.
The New World Order Thought Police are on the run because Rick Adams is back on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Yeah, we're back, folks, and here we are talking about a number of issues, needless to say. The first among them is the latest opportunity for this government to appoint yet another, if you will, another statist, another Talmudist, another, Zionist, another globalist, interventionist, socialist to the Supreme Court. And it looks like that is what all of what she stands for, all of these things, in Elena, of course, who Ms. Kagan is at 50 years old. Is quite an accomplished scholar in the sense that she has promoted many of these ideas that we have just discussed with Dave in Texas on the program. And you know, if you look, Dave, at her judicial background, there is none, as you've said, none officially, but one can just imagine what she would bring to the court in terms of ideology, in terms of ideas that are straight out of the Humanist Manifesto, the Communist Manifesto, class struggle, all of these things that are inimical to the basic blueprint of our organic law. You know, when you think about some of the things that she has written about, in 1993, her article on regulation of hate speech and pornography for the University of Chicago Law Review, she had written, "I take it as a given that we live in a society marred by racial and gender inequality, whatever that is, that certain forms of speech perpetuate and promote this inequality, and that the uncoerced disappearance of such speech would be cause for great elation. Now, what does that mean in your opinion, Dave? What is she claiming here?
She's claiming the power for the federal government to violate the First Amendment, which constitutionally it has no right to do.
Mm-hmm.
And she should not rule if she makes it to the Supreme Court. And respectfully, I don't favor her nomination. I think the Republicans should try to block her nomination if they can. I think they should try to be unified and not give in and think they have to let her through just to not look mean-spirited. I don't think they should be mean-spirited, but I don't think that's the issue here. It's her qualifications. It's her ideology. They say she doesn't have a paper trail. Not as a judge, but she got plenty of writing on her ideology is very far leftist.
In her scholarship,
there's a
yes.
big paper trail. I don't think she's ideologically well temperamentally suited from a constitutionalist perspective, constructionist perspective, to be on the court. She's obviously way too liberal for the standards of the Republican Party, and there is no constitutional obligation for them to have to agree to her being on the court if they don't think she's temperamentally well suited to the court, which I personally don't, or that they don't agree with her ideologies, which most of them shouldn't, and I myself do not. I just don't think that's the case. It's one thing to say that someone's a little more liberal than yourself, but they're not an extremist, they don't violate the Constitution, and they're extremely well qualified. I do think there are some people the Republicans should, if that were the case, not try to block. But she doesn't meet that qualification in that test. She doesn't have that level experience.
Dave, the thing is, I don't even myself personally don't like to use the term conservative or liberal. I would prefer constitutional or unconstitutional. And it just so happens that, you know, when it comes to the Constitution, we basically have a document, whether we love it or not, whether we think it was the best document or not, that is the law, the contract of the land, as you've said. And the contract was signed to by the parties, and therefore it should not be violated by the government, Congress,
absolutely.
White House, or the Supreme Court, right? All three are under the yoke of the Constitution, if I may classify it as such.
I totally agree with that. The Supreme Court seems to be saying that they can reinterpret the Constitution as they want. That's not true. All they can do is determine law and fact. They are not entitled to reinterpret the meaning of the Constitution so as to effectively change it, what it says by rulings and then claim they establish precedent doing so through case law decision, and then not abide the Constitution what it actually says, or at least amend it and get the state legislatures to concur. The only other time they played a dirty trick, in my opinion, was with the 16th and 17th Amendments. They claim ratification, and at least in those two cases that I know of, just dispute a couple others, but I believe almost for certain in the case of those two amendments, they claimed ratification of amendments that I think were most likely not properly ratified to the Constitution and not have been considered actual amendments to the Constitution,
mm-hmm.
at least in
mm-hmm.
my personal opinion. Granted,
yeah.
that's semi-official at this point. And it's complicated to explain. A lot of the research at the state archives of the legislatures said to have ratified those two amendments does not seem to add up the way it should from a constitutional perspective. It's not legally precise, and it's detailed issues state by state, but there's significant reason there to at least have something to review. But they don't even do that because they want the power, they want the control, and they want the, certainly with the case of the 16th Amendment, they want the revenue. And with the case of the 17th Amendment, they want to usurp the power from the state, from their right of equal suffrage to the U.S. Senate, to select their own Senate representation, and I oppose their doing that. But in terms of a lot of other more recent Supreme Court rulings, they've been twisting the Constitution in a number of ways. This health care bill, they say, I guess what they're going to try to hold this, the federal bench will uphold it on challenge because they'll say the federal government has a right of supremacy over the state. That's wrong. The supremacy clause in the Constitution refers to the Constitution's supremacy mm-hmm. over all law, either state law or federal law, if yeah. those laws disagree with the Constitution. The Constitution trumps them. It's not saying that anything passed by Congress automatically trumps state law in all cases. That's a total misinterpretation of the Supremacy Clause. But that's one of the interpretations of the Obama administration and Ms. Kagan. They're saying that they have the right to impose controls on interstate commerce. That's
right.
actually not true. The federal government has the right to be an honest, impartial broker in regulating interstate commerce. It has no right to attempt to directly engage in interstate commerce or to mandate or control interstate commerce.
Section 1, Article 8 of the Constitution grants Congress the authority to regulate commerce with foreign nations and certainly among the several states. The
but fact not that, inside the state.
No, not intra, but inter, and that's the key.
And all of the major healthcare insurance companies that they're dealing with are state branches of larger companies that are nationally known companies. But
that's
the
right.
Specific sub-corporations they're dealing with are actually state-chartered only institutions, because right now there's not a single health insurance company allowed to sell across any state's line. So therefore, every one of those companies are intrastate only companies. There's the Aetna Life and Casualty of Florida, which is not to be confused with the National Aetna Life and Casualty.
Well, they've used both the General Welfare Clause and totally butchered that years ago, and the Interstate Commerce Commission clauses, and they've done the same thing with that. Now the Supremacy Clause comes into play, as you point out, and what they've done is to totally mangle the very meaning of those concepts in the Constitution, and yet they're spelled out specifically in the Constitution. We have university law professors that can't read or write properly. We have a university, that teaches law now, law school here where I come from in Rhode Island. And yet, again, it's staffed by the same Talmudists, the same reinterpreters, the same change agents of the Constitution that she represents. You know, this woman turned around now in 1996, in a paper, Private Speech, Public Purpose, The Role of Government Motive in First Amendment Doctrine. And you know what she said, folks? She said that it may be proper to suppress speech because that speech may be offensive to society or to the government. Now that is Orwellian totalitarianism. Can't make it any plainer than that.
Is that writing you're saying? Did she say that last phrase, offensive to society or the government?
Or to the government.
That's treason.
Right.
That's grounds for a dismissal from the nomination to be on the Supreme Court
of course.
Because the government does not have the right to regulate speech solely against itself so as to impose itself on the people, otherwise you have dictatorship. That's actually a violation of the Constitution. That itself is treason.
See, she would assume that the court, under that philosophy, would interpret as to which speech is offensive and which is not. So that hate speech, as it is being called now, promoted by her, friendship and organizations like the ADL and the Southern Poverty Law Center, would be able to, in effect, be controlled or regulated or abolished altogether, even on the Internet. Now, hate speech is defined by those in a position to define it, not the average American, not the Constitution, but those who have created this designation of hate speech. And I don't know about you, but, you know, there is no such designation as hate speech. It's speech or no speech. It's free speech or unfree speech. It's political or entertainment, but it is speech. And when you start creating new designations such as hate speech, now you're running that slippery slope, which of course leads to total and a total avalanche and destruction of any kind of constitutional law regarding First Amendment free speech, Dave.
I totally agree with that. The Constitution does not recognize speech that can be controlled by the federal government.
That's right.
Very limited opportunity for state by state to have not allow yelling fire in a crowded theater if it would lead, especially when there's not a fire, to stampede, which could lead to people being hurt or killed. You can be liable to being prosecuted if your speech causes physical harm to others and you knew that it was not necessary to give that speech. But in terms of free speech, a common person or free publication, and the Supreme Court has previously ruled freedom to broadcast, freedom of journalism, so on and so forth, freedom of publishing, there is no limitation on that. The federal government has no right to do that. First Amendment gives absolute right of free speech. You cannot start chipping away at absolute right of free speech in the United States. Other countries do have laws on some limitations on speech. I personally don't favor them, but that doesn't apply in the United States. Well,
that's what the ADL would
not?
Like to do here. You see, that's what they're doing here. Ms. Kagan has given no indication that she is not in lockstep with the Bronfmans, the ADL types, the Southern Poverty Law Center, all of these extremist Jewish organizations that seek to impose just such a constraint upon our Constitution. And, you know, she was, don't forget that, she served right alongside Obama at the University of Chicago. She was there with him, rubbing shoulders, rubbing elbows. And, you know, I mean, you see the camaraderie here. You see the radical Marxian philosophy, which they both have adopted. So let's not kid ourselves, folks. What she represents is the reason she was selected for this position. And I said it months ago, well, a couple of months ago when her name first came up. I guess it was about 5-6 weeks ago, that she would be the one. She would be the one that he would seek to nominate. And sure enough, here she is, Ms. Kagan, and, you know, we haven't even explored what she's written on other subjects. But, you know, suffice it to say, we've got, with her, Stephen Breyer, and Ruth Ginsburg, we'll have three on the Supreme Court who are Jewish, okay? One-third of the court will be Jewish, and I don't mean that in a religious sense. I mean that in a racial identity sense. And now we have about one-sixth or one-seventh of the Senate, which is in similar fashion. So, you know, when Dershowitz wrote his book, Chutzpah, he advocated that, indeed, the takeover, the Talmudization, if you will, of our legal system be something that we should be looking forward to. And, boy, I'll tell you, if this isn't it, I don't know what is. I really don't. This Talmudization, this change of our legal system, the Noahide laws that we will get into in future programs, you know, is a frightening reminder of this control over us, over our nation, over our people, over our country that has been exhibited since the days of Louis Brandeis and FDR, when the whole court was totally rearranged and reconstructed to approve of the Marxist philosophies of these Felix Frankfurters and people like that in the court. 1933, 1934, 35. You know, the change that took place monetarily and in terms of our economy, the Social Security, the whole change of government to make us a nation beholden to government rather than to God. And these are the things that I find so objectionable myself, Dave, as you do, I'm sure.
Well, I definitely agree. I don't think we should be a state society and a totally, if not sacrilegious society, even arguably. One thing I find as a kind of contradiction in terms of Ms. Kagan is she came out a few years back, and now she's kind of soft-pedal admitting to it, but it's kind of already out there. Previously, she admitted to being a lesbian. Now, I'm not saying this to be mean-spirited, and I'm not saying this to
mm-hmm.
paint scarlet letters necessarily, but this is what she had said herself a few years ago. Before, this was admittedly before she became Solicitor General, but she didn't deny it during her confirmation hearings for that office mm-hmm. about a year and a half ago. But the issue is, she can't be a religiously Jewish. Apparently she's kind of a non-religiously practicing cultural Jew, but not a religious Jewish person, if she's going to claim to be a practicing lesbian, because from an Orthodox Jewish perspective, that would be a contradiction in terms. And I'm not saying this being mean-spirited, but I am just pointing out the technicality of it, from whom it may concern. It's been said some people thought the court should be more proportionally representative of society as a whole. I personally think it should have qualified people on there, regardless of the statistical demographic breakdown. But I will say this, it would be odd, and I'm not even being anti-Jewish in terms of Judaism as totally separate from philosophical ideology, just Jewish as a religion. But it would seem odd to have a much greater representation in proportional terms of Jews in Congress or in the court than is their percentage in society as a whole, to the taking away of the opportunity of other underrepresented groups of even having the chance to be represented where they could present qualified candidates some of those positions. They think one group, small group, is kind of hogging the territory, so to speak, from others. Is that fair, arguably, against these people who say they want all this representation of different groups? It's a little hypocritical there, arguably.
No doubt about that.
We can get on the healthcare thing now, if you like. I've got a number of
questions. Yeah, that's what I was just about to say, because of the break coming up. I did want to get more into the objections and the fact, by the way, that we have these 20 attorneys general in states across America that are in opposition have filed suit to declare it unconstitutional, and on what basis we will discover. But it is important to note, folks, that in addition to that, the fact that it is unconstitutional, an abrogation of the U.S. Constitution, the fact is that there is a model resolution for any state legislature to nullify the federal health care bill of 2010. I want to get into that, Dave, if you are familiar with it or not, but in fact there is a model bill for each legislature to assert its authority to pull out of this system, and that's what we need to see much more of. Also, folks, those of you on the line, stay with me, please. We will get to you in the next hour. So that doesn't mean a whole hour from now, but within the next hour, in about 15 minutes or so, we will start taking calls for our guest, and he is Dave from Texas, who is, as you can see, quite the constitutionalist, who is very much an activist in these regards. So we'll do that. Our number, of course, 800-313-9443. Don't forget to support this network, republicbroadcasting.org. Right on the homepage, you can join the pledge. We'll be right back. Rick Adams, Uncensored.
Attention RBN listeners, the Freeze-Dry Guy, providing the finest in long-term storage food since 1970. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. In actual scientific tests, these foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. These foods are delicious tasting, hearty, light to carry, and easy to prepare under the most adverse conditions. Unfortunately, many people building a family food storage program, as well as many companies providing emergency feeding programs, simply do not give you enough protein, especially animal protein. No other food satisfies like animal protein during stressful times. If you're a meat eater, you will definitely want our freeze-dried meats and entrees, but we do offer vegetarian items as well. Visit freezedryguide.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. Freeze-Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Attention all business owners, save up to 20% free of charge on your business gas and electric energy supply bill. Call 1-800-641-5880. Due to deregulation of gas and electric utilities by the federal government, businesses in 16 states can receive up to 20% savings off their energy supply bill. This program is not for residences, it's only for businesses. Call 800-641-5880 for a list of qualifying states or visit RBN's website at www.republicbroadcasting.org. Enrollment is easy and completely free. No hidden costs, no interruption of service, and no cancellation fees. Don't delay. It takes 30 to 60 days to enroll. Call 1-800-641-5880. Thousands of businesses everywhere are saving money. Small offices and restaurants to large hotels, hospitals, municipalities, major fast food chains and factories. This is a no-brainer. Your business is entitled to save this money free of charge. Call 1-800-641-5880. It's easy. Start saving money now. Just call 1-800-641-5880.
Do you know the truth about cancer treatments? Do you realize that with all presently accepted methods, you are not correctly attacking the cancer and you are mostly fighting to survive the treatment? Do you realize that mutilating surgery, burning and poisoning of your entire system are totally unnecessary? But now it's cancer's turn to die with LaserMed Incorporated's patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at our physician's office. Laser technology at its best. For more information, visit www.lasemedinc.com on the web. That's www.lasemedinc.com.
Call now, 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528.
All right, here we are back again, and now we're talking specifically about the so-called Obama health care bill. And, Dave, your objections have already been stated to some degree, but I'd like to have you amplify upon them, the so-called supremacy clause of Article, actually of Article 6, reads, the, as you know, the Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States shall be the supreme law of the land. And the judges in every state shall be bound thereby in the Constitution. So what they've done now, these activists, as they call themselves, is changed the whole meaning of the supremacy clause, and now they've coupled it with the welfare clause and the interstate commerce clause, and they've created a mantra for the government to regulate or take over whatever it is it wishes to do.
Well, the general welfare clause doesn't mean anything what the liberals claim it does. It's actually the preamble to the Constitution, justifying the Constitution's creation. All it refers to is that general well-being of society in each of the states mm-hmm. will be protected where an outside threat would threaten the states as a whole. Inside the states is the state's responsibility, unless for some reason an outside force makes it impossible for them to do so. And then the federal government can aid them in restoration of civil order, not in terms of dictatorship, just not the breakdown of society. But the federal right. government does not have the right to control the state. It does not have the right to say that you create what we think of today as welfare programs, LBJ style, and that somehow the federal government is, one, empowered, and two, required to do this, and everyone's required to be under the government dole as they parcel out things to you. I've never understood the liberals' philosophy that everything has to be controlled by government, one, and two, theoretically they want equality in society where everyone's supposed to live under exact equal measure. If we did it the way they want, everyone in America would live on less than $15,000 a year in poverty, and the federal government would squelch all private capital, private property, and private enterprise. And mm-hmm. everyone would live equal but in poverty and in dictatorship, whereas what wealth there would be under the government's control, and then, of course, the government would squander and mismanage the wealth and the huge state bureaucracies, the overpaid government bureaucrats, and everyone else taxed to death. But strangely, we're getting very close to already having that. I don't understand why liberals think they need to go look for what's supposedly unequal in society and then demand that government will level everything out. Who said the government is supposed to level everything out?
They have.
Jefferson never acceded the point that it's government's responsibility to do that. He never set themselves up, you see.
The ideologues have set themselves up as rulers under the law, knowing that they cannot just write off the law. They've reinterpreted the law and changed the meaning of law to justify what they see as their benevolent hand. The invisible, no, it's now the visible hand of Big Brother to right all of their perceived wrongs. And this is, of course, the path to tyranny. It always has been the path to tyranny, and that's what they've imposed upon us through the use of the Supreme Court. By changing the makeup of the court ideologically, they've now changed the meaning of law. This is even more dangerous than the ratification process, because they've essentially nullified the law of the land
without having to ratify it.
Interpretation, you see?
And they have no right to do that, absolutely no right to do that.
And that's what they've done. But that's what they've gotten away with, because the people themselves, through their elected representatives, have not challenged it. And as you point out, with the direct election of senators, that makes it almost more impossible to keep them in line in the court, because now you have special interest control of the Senate rather than local legislatures controlling the Senate.
I agree.
And therefore, you can't control the rest of the federal government. It was a pretty invidious and insidious plan, I think. All right, we got a break. 1 minute. Come right back. Hour number two, Radio Avenger Rick Adams and his guest, Dave from Texas. We will return to continue and your calls just ahead. Stay tuned.
With recent internet.